Welcome, Lieutenant Colonel Skellicky. Welcome to Australia.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Phenomenal to be here.
Could you just first of all start by explaining why are you currently deployed to Northern Australia? And can you say something about the kind of exercises your squadron is doing out of Tyndall?
Absolutely, I'd love to. So our squadron deployed down here as part of the Enhanced Air Cooperation Initiative, which is a partnership between our two militaries, the Australian and United States militaries. It's a multi-phased initiative, and right now we're in phase one, which is having these regular rotations of aircraft and personnel to different bases with the Royal Australian Air Force. That's the Air Force side of this. So that's what this is a part of. That's what our squadron was tasked with, and what we're here to do. Now, what we're specifically doing is while we're here at operating out of RAF Base Tyndall, is integrating with the 75 Squadron F-18s and the 2nd Squadron's E-7 Wedgetail, the Airborne Command and Control bird. And we're just conducting local scenarios in the local airspace just to demonstrate how interoperable and how well our two air forces can integrate together in some tactical scenarios. Why this is a little bit different is obviously us coming all the way down from Alaska and operating in these airspaces gives us the ability to really get down to that detailed integration that sometimes you can't capture some of those lessons in some of the bigger exercises that the Australian Air Force has been a part of and that that we've been a part of back in the States. This has allowed us to really get down right down to individual pilot execution where the rubber meets the road, if you will, to see how we can best work together.
Now, you mentioned the Wedgetail. The Wedgetail is already deployed out and operating with USAF in the Middle East. Have you had a chance to work together yet in the Northern Territory? And what kind of interoperability gains do you hope to get out of that?
Yeah, so we have. So we the really neat thing about being here is that our squadron, the 90th Fighter Squadron, and the 75 Squadron, recently operated together over in the Middle East, doing real-world operations. And, of course, we did that in concert with the E-7 Wedgetails that were over there as well. For the purposes of this exercise, though, again, now we can tailor the scenarios away from that Middle Eastern theater and really open up to really a wide range of different potential conflicts that might arise. And so there's no specific thing that it's geared towards, but what it's meant to do is maximize the capabilities of each platform. So we created some scenarios where just some F-22s alone aren't going to be able to solve the problem, or just F-18s alone aren't going to be able to solve that tactical problem. E-7 alone, obviously, without somebody to provide the fire control isn't going to be able to solve, or fire kinetic effects isn't going to be able to solve the problem alone. So these scenarios allowed us to kind of manage kind of our learning objectives so that we could say, hey, unless we work all of the capabilities of our aircraft together and figure out how to put these things together, you're not going to be successful in these fictitious scenarios. And what we've seen is that in fact holds true. Anytime you get just one kind of piece of it operating on its own without the other ones in conjunction, we're much, much less effective. So this exercise has been a phenomenal way to demonstrate that for our young pilots and really to discover that. And then also we can present those lessons when we go back home to pilots that join the squadron later and stuff and really say, hey, here's how we found to integrate these things to maximum effect. Should we ever need to?
Great. I see that you mentioned the F-18s and the Wedgetail. What about the airborne refueling part of the piece? Is it possible for you to get refueled by RAAF tankers?
It's certainly possible. We haven't done it that I'm aware of with the F-22. Are you referring to the Australian refueling aircraft?
Yes. I mean, how do you do it?
It's certainly possible. It's the same system a very similar system to what we use off of our own refuelers. We have two KC-135s refuelers operating out of RAF Darwin right now that are helping to support this exercise as well. And the Australian refueling, I can't remember what the designation of it is again. But that was actually deployed with us. We got to see that thing operate in real-world contingency operations, and it's an impressive aircraft as well. It's certainly possible. We just haven't done it yet. While I was over there, I know they did start refueling some F-16s, I believe. They showed that they were able to refuel some F-16s while we were flying there with them.
In terms of the F-22, you talk about impressive aircraft. You're flying the pointy end of the spear. How does it compare with other combat aircraft you've flown previously?
Yeah, so I have about a little less than 1,000 hours in the F-15C and a little over 1,000 hours in the F-22, so about 2,000 hours of fighter experience. The leap in technology and capability from the fourth generation platforms like the F-15 and 16 and to the F-22 is night and day. It's just a huge advancement in capability. But as we see, even within the United States Air Force, one side of it can't do it alone. Each aircraft brings unique capabilities to the battle space. And that's something that we've seen here, is that the fourth generation F-18s really complement the F-22. And so we always love to look at these things in terms of comparison, but really you need to think of it more in terms of complementary, in terms of capabilities that they bring. Certainly, I think the F-22 has more capabilities in certain roles than the F-18. But then again, the F-18 has certain has capabilities in certain air-to-ground roles and other things that the F-22 maybe isn't as good at. So again, it's that complementary aspect when you say, hey, what's the coolest plane out there, or what's the most capable plane out there? It's really tough to judge. Certainly, I'll be a little bit biased in that because I fly the F-22 and have been for about 10 years. That I think it's probably one of the coolest planes on Earth. That can be categorized as an opinion, not a statement of fact.
Great. Now, it's also one of the most complex pieces of machinery that flies. In terms of supporting the F-22 deployment out of Tyndall, how much of that kit did you have to bring out yourself, and what kind of upgrades were involved? Could you say a little bit more?
Sure can. So we did. We deployed a fair amount of support equipment on a 747 and also a C-17 cargo bird down here to RAP Tyndall, and we've got about 240 total people between maintainers, security forces, logisticians, everybody to support the operations for the aircraft here. That's certainly not required. You can definitely get away with a much smaller footprint, but that's what we brought for this exercise because we were going to be operating from here for 3 weeks, and we also did a small kind of mini movement over to RAF base Townsville early, let's see, 2 weeks ago, and then early this week as well. So last week and this week, we did some small kind of out and back missions to the Townsville area and Townsville airspace. With that, we just simply had a single seat, the C-17. We just loaded that down with some basic equipment, some maintainers, and some security forces, and we hopped over there with three aircraft and operated out of there for a couple days. So that kind of gives you a scope of about how much equipment we need. So while we have kind of a big footprint here at Tyndall right now, we certainly don't need that to operate at other locations. And again, that speaks to the interoperability of the forces, not just the, I know we spent a lot of time talking about the fighter integration side and the combat role, but when you really piece together this logistics side and the support aspects and all the other functions of a military that are so critical and are very, very useful for other functions, such as humanitarian crises, earthquake relief, tsunami relief, any of those kind of things, that logistical function is going to take center stage. And the interoperability of that is equally as important to any of the other aspects of this.
You mentioned you'd come all the way from Alaska, and the Northern Territory is just a little bit different, to put it mildly.
A little bit.
Could you talk us through what are the are there any particular challenges from operating in Northern Territory for the F-22, and what about the advantages? Talk us through the pros and cons.
Yeah, so certainly one of the advantages in the Northern Territory here is you have a large operating airspace that you can train in and get good at. It's similar to Alaska in that respect. While Alaska might have some more terrain and things like glaciers and waterfalls and things a little more green, the Northern Territory in terms of airspace is very very well suited for air training because it's more sparsely populated. So that makes it a really ideal environment. The weather patterns here in the Northern Territory, especially during the dry season, man, I don't think you could pick a better location to operate from. So that's great. Now, this time of year, of course, you have the wet season. It's a little bit more challenging, just because you get some rain delays and a little bit more water running through some of the systems and everything in the aircraft. But certainly, as we've shown, you can take an F-22 and a C-17 out of a minus 15 degrees Celsius environment where it's snowing, and fly it all the way down here and operate it where it's positive 37 or 39 degrees the other day Celsius, and almost 100% humidity, and operate just fine.
Now, you obviously flew over a lot of water to get here, but is the F-22 configured to perform missions over water as well as over land?
Yeah, the role of the F-22 and any Air Force is control and exploitation of the air domain. And so with that, air starts at every surface you can touch and then goes above it. So over water, over land, wherever we need to operate these aircraft or wherever we need to get to with our cargo or tanker refuelers is where we'll go.
Finally, Lieutenant Colonel Skalicki, we've heard that you've got an Australian amongst your midst. I have to ask you, how did that happen?
I'm asking myself the same question every day, and I wish somebody could provide me an answer. No, I'm just kidding. So here's the really neat thing about the 90th Fighter Squadron Dicemen, and what's kind of historic about this trip back this year. It's almost 75 years ago to the day, almost, that elements of the 90th Bomb Squadron at the time, and the 3rd Bomb Group, which later became the 3rd Wing, which we're a part of, were operating out of the Northern Territory and parts of Queensland in Australia, fighting in World War II. So about 75 years later to the day, we're back and we're getting to operate here, we being our squadron, which is really neat to be part of that that lineage and that history. More recently, one of the pieces of our association, our integration with one another, has been the Australian Exchange Pilot Program, which is where our Air Force provides some pilots to fly with the Royal Australian Air Force, and of course they provide some pilots to fly with us. Now, I mentioned that history back to World War II of the 90th being here, as the story goes, the Australian Air Force at the time in World War II had there was one of the pilots that was a good friend or a good mate, if you will, to the United States folks, and they kind of just integrated him into the squadron and said, hey, we should really look at having him just become a part of our squadron. I don't know if that's actually 100% true or not, but that's what the legend is. What it spawned into today is that for the last about 6 years or 7 years, we've had an Australian exchange pilot in the 90th Fighter Squadron flying the F-22 Raptor with us. So that's been really, really neat. And our current Australian exchange pilot is a Dutchman in every sense of the word. So he is a squadron mate in every sense of the word. In fact, he was our squadron instructor pilot of the year. He's that caliber of individual and that caliber of pilot. What we keep finding again and again as we do these exchanges and integration exercises is just how compatible we are. We really, speak a common language and share common traits and capabilities. So we're really fortunate to have our Australian Exchange pilot in our midst.
As you're probably finding out, it's not entirely a common language up there in your experience in the Northern Territory, but I presume it's an advantage to have one local in your midst. But does he remain under operational U.S. command throughout the time of his secondment?
Yeah, so he control. He's a squadron member in my squadron in every sense of the word. Certainly, there are some administrative functions and things where he falls under the Australian side of it. He is still a Royal Australian Air Force member, and he adheres to those standards and guidelines. But again, it's because of the commonalities and similarities between our two air forces and all that common ground that we have. It really is pretty seamless. It's really hard to tell that he isn't just a member of the squadron like every other person who comes to join the Diceman. So again, that just highlights that interoperability. But he is still an Australian Air Force pilot, and he still follows that chain as well.
So I gather you've got a deployment coming down to Avalon for the air show next week. Just wish you all the very best with that, and as you fly over then, tip your wings, let us know which one's the Aussie.
I sure will. We got, they should be getting on the road within the next day or two, and I know we already have some of our maintainers and support equipment down there, as every good deployment does, is supported not just the aircraft, it's all the equipment and personnel that go along with it. But be looking for the jets. They'll be down there, and it'll be a fantastic display.
Wish you all the best for that and the remainder of your time. Thank you very much, Lieutenant Colonel Scalacci.
All right. Thanks, Ewan.